Now, that could be the next big frontier. And if you like listening to our show and you do so via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page, and you can reach us directly with your comments. Just throw in some faint praise and email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
And you too can be dancing with Daddy G every Tuesday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Malt Shop, right here on WHFR.FM. The jukebox will be spinning the platters from the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and join me, Daddy G, at the Malt Shop on Tuesdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Be there. Or be square.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. The hot topic in ufology today is the Pentagon's admission that they have been studying the UFO problem ever since they claimed to have stopped doing so in 1969. And we have discussed it on this show before, but heretofore haven't heard from who I consider the last word on UFOs, the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. Jan Harzen is the International Executive Director for MUFON. He graduated from UCLA Engineering School, where he earned a degree in nuclear engineering. After graduating, he enjoyed a career with IBM. His interest in nuclear engineering was sparked by his own UFO sighting in 1965. He wanted to figure out how these anomalous craft worked. After retiring from IBM, he began working full-time for MUFON in an effort to find the answers to the questions that perplexed him all these years. And after sifting through the misidentifications and occasional hoaxes for so many years, it would appear that MUFON's declaration of the UFO reality has finally been vindicated. Is this the case, or will the Pentagon story end up another dead end? Well, let's get the answer from the man who has dedicated his life to the cause, Mr. Jan Harzen. How are you, Jan?
Good. Hey, Dave. Thank you. Appreciate you having me on the show.
Oh, I appreciate you coming on. I know you're a busy man. So Let's see.
What's the answer? That's what you want to know.
What's the answer? What's going on?
Yeah, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah.
Well, I've spent quite a bit of time here the last 2 months actually 3 months, talking with this group, various individuals in the group, and it appears to me these are just, you know, folks who've worked and served their government, either the military, Department of Defense, Congress, private industry, and just private research, who through their association have known for quite some time that this UFO phenomenon is real.
When you say
cool. Although they're not really talking about what's behind it, they are talking about the technology, which is so far advanced that it's about ready to set the world on fire. So the thing is, these guys want to take this and figure out how it works and start basically commercializing it. So I'm all for that. I think we should be much further ahead than we are. The last 50 years of our space race has kind of been in a dead heat around the Earth, and rather than traveling out to the stars. And this could really be the one thing that sets it on a course of great adventure, in my opinion. So I'm 100% behind what they're doing.
Well, when you say the group, what group are we talking about here? Let's back up.
Oh, okay. Well, when I say the group, I'm talking about the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences. It's the company that Tom DeLong started, and through his association with a number of people, has pulled a team together that I think is probably second to none in terms of their credentials and their backgrounds in terms of what they've accomplished in their careers. Now that they're all retired, they're, you know, trying to do this in the private world in a commercial enterprise type basis. So I guess Tom originally met some of these folks or began the journey on this thing when he was invited by a friend to attend a Lockheed Skunk Works family event. Most aerospace companies once a year will hold a family day where you can bring your spouse and your kids and other parts of the family to the event to see what's being built and what's being done. And he was invited to one of these events at the Lockheed Skunk Works, and through there and his association, based on the fact he's a rock singer, he met a number of people and started building associations with him, and it put him in a course where he, over time, built up quite a cadre of people who had inside knowledge as to what was going on. Now, I don't think this is the cabal. People all think that, you know, there could be a sinister side to the thing. I think these are just sincere individuals who know that the phenomenon is real, and they're kind of scratching their heads why the U.S. government doesn't do more to research it. So they've decided they're going to do it on their own.
Okay, this is the Advanced Aerospace... Wait a minute.
Well, it's To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, yeah. But it's called TTSA. The Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program, ATIP, which one of the individuals came from, that's Luis Elizondo. That was a Pentagon program originally, but then they stopped funding it, and it got picked up, I believe, by the Navy and the CIA to keep funding it, which was a private, or it was a government program to track and monitor UFO activity in and around our planet. And they had a project office set up for well over 10 years. Luis Elizondo ran that project office, and they had direct line of sight to the different militaries, our military folks, and were able to follow up on sighting reports as they came in. So they have about 200 cases, as I understand it, that they believe are high-quality cases with images and video that they plan to release over time. And this is basically going to settle out the question once and for all that UFOs are definitely for real. Those who don't believe it will now be able to see it with their own eyes. And although I think there's probably still people out there who won't believe it even when they see it. So,
oh, yeah.
We'll just have to see what happens with that.
I have the, I don't know what the polls say now, and it's hard to judge polls, but... back in 2002, I believe it was, 2003, when I published one of my books, the polls showed that 15% of people, if you told them today, here's the proof that we're being visited, they wouldn't believe it anyway.
Right, and that goes more to the heart of the human condition. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a paradigm that we build up over our life, and it's our belief system. And if something doesn't fit within our belief system, our first reaction as a species is to deny it, deny that it exists.
Right.
I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges to this whole study of the UFO phenomenon is the fact that most people, not most people, but many people hold the case that we have to be the only life in the universe. I'm not sure how they get to that, but yeah. With all the new data pouring in daily. But you probably won't ever change their minds. So that brings you to the next thought that you know, the way change happens is that the old generation dies off and the new generation grows up saying, of course, this is the way it's always been. So we'll just have to see if we have quick changes or if they're just more gradual changes over time.
Well, don't you see that happening now with millennials?
Oh, definitely. The thing is that millennials, of course, I'm sure they believe, vast majority of them, that we're not alone in the universe. Whether they believe that UFOs are actually coming here, that life is coming here, I don't know. That's kind of a thing. They haven't really been indoctrinated like the generation from the 50s and 60s was into the whole UFO genre. I mean, you look across many of these conferences that are run, it tends to be an older crowd of people who grew up with UFOs and flying saucers. That was what they saw when they were kids. The new kids growing up, it's just part of their culture, right, with Star Wars and Guardians of the Galaxy and all these different movies that come out with it in it. So they just see it as more of a, oh, yeah, that's that. But
it's fictional.
Fictional, right. It's just, well, yeah. But, I mean, I think they, in their heart, believe that we're not alone in the universe, but they just don't have any knowledge, personal knowledge, that or parts of their own paradigm that say that this is definitely something for real. So, and that's one of the things that I think Tom DeLonge and the group at TTSA is trying to change, as well as MUFON, is how do we get to our young folk and get them educated on the subject, because it's vitally important, I think, for the future of all of humanity, that our young people growing up, our future leaders, understand that this is definitely something that's real.
Right. Well, I think the answer is connecting the dots, having them connect the dots. 100, 200 years ago, if you had told them we'd be where we are today, having man walked on the moon, et cetera, they would have laughed, you know. But
right.
We've come a long way since then. Well, if there is life out there and on other planets and intelligent life, wouldn't it be, and we're a young planet. Earth is a young planet. Our solar system is a young solar system. We know this. Okay, so why wouldn't it be logical that they have advanced to the point where we want to go, we want to be a spacefaring species? Wouldn't it be logical that they have reached that point?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if you just think how fast technology has proceeded in the last 100 years, I mean, I worked for IBM 40 years ago for the last 37, 40 years. You know, we had computers the size of a room, literally, with the required air conditioning to make them run. Today, that same compute power is in your palm of your hand, in your iPhone. So just in the course of 30, 40 years, we've advanced that far. Let's just step forward another 100 years. You know, who knows what technology is going to be, especially artificial intelligence, advanced AI, virtual reality. It's going to be a much different world than we live in today. So if you have a species that's been out there and maybe is 100 or 1,000 years more advanced than us, it's only mind-boggling what they could have in the way of technology. It would look to us like it was, literally from the gods.
So, right.
I think we have to be cognizant of that. The other thing, David, is that it won't be too long before we ourselves are traveling out into the universe. I mean, that's one of the things these folks at TTSA are trying to do, which is operationalize the equations for manipulation of space-time. And if you can do that, and you can get out into the universe, one day very soon, I'm saying soon being in the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, but that's a very short period of time when you think about it, we will be circling above a planet, looking down on some kind of life forms down on that planet, and if we were to go down and engage with those life forms, whatever they might be, we then become the aliens, right? We're the aliens.
That's right.
So, for us to say, oh, there can't be aliens, or there can't be these other life forms visiting Earth, I think we're just not opening up our minds to what's really going on and how very, very soon that's going to be us visiting someone else.
And all these fictional, all these movies and what have you, Independence Day, War of the Worlds, They all preach that if aliens come here, they're going to come here to take us over, et cetera, et cetera. Why do you think that is? What are they trying to tell us?
I think because fear sells movies. I think that's what it is. So fear. my personal opinion is if you're that advanced as a civilization, you've probably figured out a way to weed the aggression out of your species. You know, I mean, you learn to stop killing each other because I don't think you get off planet otherwise. Michio Kaku, in his book, I think it's Hyperspace is the name of the book, if I'm not mistaken, he talks about different levels of civilizations, and he talks about a level type 1, a type 2, and a type 3. And we're type 0. We're not even to a type 1 yet. But type 0 is from caveman to nuclear age. And if you are lucky enough not to destroy your planet or yourselves with nuclear weaponry, then you get to graduate to a type 1 civilization, which has the ability to manipulate its weather, manipulate its environment, and do certain things which we're now just now learning how to do. So I'm thinking that I'm hoping that we won't figure out a way to blow ourselves up and set ourselves back to zero.
Yeah.
But if another civilization been able to make it beyond that, and hopefully we will too, that you basically learn to be peaceful as a civilization. I mean, that's my hope, and that's my belief. We'll certainly find out. I know there's other people who believe otherwise, but that's my belief personally.
Can you imagine how far our civilization would be today had only a couple hundred years ago, maybe 500 years ago, we all got together and said, you know what, killing each other is pointless. Let's put our minds together and see where we can go with this technology. Can you imagine where we'd be?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And that's probably...
You know, scientists are kind of that ilk. I mean, I've ran into some JPL scientists years ago. They were doing an exhibit down in Santa Monica, I believe it was Santa Monica or Huntington Beach, where they were showing off the Mars rovers and things like that, models of them. And I got talking to one of the scientists, and he was very open with me. He says, you know, we work with the Chinese and the Russian scientists. I mean, you know, all this stuff that goes on with politics and all that other stuff, we kind of ignore that. We just talk to each other. Because, you know, with the Internet, I mean, you can talk to anybody anywhere in the world. You don't have to.
Right.
There's no boundaries with the Internet.
Right.
So these guys all talk to each other and are working together and collaborating to some extent. I mean, obviously, if you're working on a top-secret project for the U.S. government, you're not going to be sharing that with anyone outside the United States.
No.
But this kind of stuff does go on in terms of attending conferences all over the world. Scientific conferences. So I think we're quickly evolving as a world, humanity, to a point where we're going to very quickly see the curve go straight up in terms of our advancement in all sorts of technologies.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope.
Yeah, let's hope.
I need to take one moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, 89.3 FM. On the radio, WHFR.FM, on the computer. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with the head of international director of the Mutual UFO Network, Mr. Jan Harrison. And Jan, let's back up a minute and tell us about your personal UFO sighting.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. You know, back, I was born in the 50s, and it was the early 60s, just learning to read, basically. And the newspapers in those days, would often have front page articles on them about UFOs and flying. They called them flying saucers back then. So
right.
There might be one seen over the White House or over some in Michigan or wherever. But it was always front page news. I mean, people were not afraid to publish that stuff. It's much different today in the media, although I think it's shifting again. But my brother and I got very much interested in this subject, and we decided that we should build one of our own. And we designed a 30-foot craft with pulsed electromagnetic engines in it.
Really?
We were going to build this in our backyard. And one day, my mom went to the store and asked if we wanted to go. So we followed her and basically found a little magazine. And I believe it was the Flying Saucer Review, a little half-size magazine on the magazine rack, and we bought a copy for a buck. Mm-hmm. And took it home with us, and we started reading it, and we said, one of the articles mentioned that these craft, these flying saucers, are seen around military installations, mm-hmm. nuclear power plants, and places where anti-gravity research is being done. So we looked at each other and said, well, heck, we're doing anti-gravity research. Maybe we'll come here. Now, we were just little kids, you know, 8 or 9 years old.
Right.
But literally, within a very short period of time, a craft showed up in our backyard, of all places, and my brother came into my room early on a Saturday morning to wake me up to say he'd heard some commotion in the backyard. And someone had been playing with the screen on his window, and we should go check it out. So we got up, checked it out, didn't see anything, went back out through the garage door into the backyard, walked to the end of the house to see if there's anything down by his window. There wasn't. Turned around to go back into the garage, and there, 30 feet from us, was a landing craft with four landing gear, hovering 10 feet off the ground, making a humming noise like a transformer on a telephone pole late at night.
Mm.
And it was perfectly smooth surfaces. It had the corrugated blue landing gear on it. It was orange in color. It had black suction cups on the bottom and brown crossbars on it. So my first reaction was, oh, my gosh, these things are real. But it was just frozen in the sky. It was like 30 feet from us, 10 feet off the ground. So very, I mean, I could have taken a stone and hit it if I wanted to throw one at it.
Oh, yeah.
We watched it for a little bit. I decided I'd go into the house and get a camera. And by the time I got back out, it was gone. My brother was standing up on top of the swing set looking out to the west so he could see it. And I asked him, you know, what happened? And he said, well, it just hovered there for a second. And it slowly started to drift to the west. And then, boom, it just shot up over the horizon. So it was a very quick sighting. But it was right there in your face, so you couldn't deny it.
How long?
I can't say for a fact that it was extraterrestrial, but I just don't know that we have that kind of technology. I mean, this was 1965. So it'd been 52 years now since I saw this, coming up on 53. I just don't think if we had that kind of technology, we would have put it to use already. That's my personal opinion.
One would think that if that was a prototype, it was well out of prototype stage, wouldn't you think?
I would think so, yeah. Now, we did have the Rockwell Science Center in Thousand Oaks, which is where I grew up. I mean, so there was a group of scientists working for an aerospace company, but... Mm-hmm. This was a Saturday morning at 6:30, and I just don't see that they would be testing one of their craft that early. You know, I just don't see why they would fly it in my backyard. It doesn't make any sense.
You
take it out to Area 51, or you take it up to a Mojave Desert or someplace where people wouldn't be watching it.
In a residential area, right?
Right, exactly. It was a very residential area.
That's what I say about things like the Phoenix lights, you know? Why would they fly it over a heavily populated, in the entire state of Arizona, you know?
Right.
If it were one of ours.
Question.
But anyway. So you don't need any further proof. You have your proof, right?
Well, that's kind of, I've had people say, oh, so you believe in UFOs. I say, I don't believe in UFOs. I know that UFOs exist. I mean, I've seen one myself. So, yeah, it definitely turns your world upside down. For us, anyway, we were young kids at the time. I think I was 10, he was 9.
Mm.
And, you know, it's very unsettling because, you know, you can believe in something, but, boy, when you see it and it's right there in front of your eyes, I mean, you can't deny it any longer. It's there. So that becomes your new reality. And then, of course, you got a world out there who's saying something quite different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, these things probably aren't real. you know, people are just mistaken. There's just hysteria. And you're thinking, no, these things are real.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes hard for you to process that as a young kid. I think it's hard for you to process it even as an adult, frankly. And we get people calling all the time to MUFON who are suffering from post-traumatic stress from their encounters with other beings and or other craft.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the nice services we can provide to them is a safe place
mm-hmm.
for them to come and share their stories and the information they've gleaned and... let them know that they're not crazy, that they did see what they saw, and that's quite all right because it's an everyday occurrence across the globe.
Well, does MUFON deal with the nuts and bolts UFOs, or do they deal also with abductees or those who claim to be abductees or contactees with aliens?
Yes, excellent question, David. So MUFON really has... dual paths. On the one side, with our national and international structure, I might mention that we operate in 43 countries and all 50 states. So we've got got quite a wide range of geographic areas where we are located.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the network of investigators under the auspices of the national director and or state directors who are out there, and their teams of assistant state directors, assistant national directors, chief investigators, et cetera, they have teams of field investigators who go investigate these things. So that's a very linear, craft-oriented type of a structure, and that's been what MUFON's been doing since 1969. But we have a whole nother team in MUFON called the Experiencer Research Team under Kathy Martin and George Medich. Kathy was is the niece of Betty from Betty and Barney Hill, and her family's had a whole history of these kind of interactions with non-human beings, extraterrestrials, if you will, for many generations. So that whole team basically helps people who've had those experiences deal with it and rationalize it and get them the support that they need, whether it's they want to just report it to us, so get that investigated, or if they want to attend a support group, or if they want to find somebody who can do hypnotherapy on them and try to help them recover lost memories, or they're suffering from post-traumatic stress and they would need to see a psychologist or somebody who can help them get through that. We basically help them get to the resources they need to accomplish whatever it is they're trying to accomplish.
So does MUFON have, in different states, do we have psychologists, psychiatrists, hypnotists, someone who regresses a subject?
Yeah, we have a whole list of referral network in place, and that's run by the ERT team, Kathy Martin and George Medich, and all of the folks who were on that team. If you want to learn more about it, you can just go to the website, MUFON.com. On the right-hand side, as you scroll down the homepage, there's an icon there that says Experiencer Research Team. Click on that icon, and it'll give you an overview of what the team does and who's on the team and what they do and how they do it. And then if you feel like it, if you feel like you might be an experiencer, fill out the Experiencer Questionnaire and Experiencer Questionnaire at the top left of the page and send it in, and one of our folks will contact you and talk you through it.
Hmm. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. It's really good. I mean, honestly, it's a great service because, David, what you find is that people call us all the time and they say, hey, I had this happen to me, but I can't tell anyone because they'll think I'm crazy.
Right.
And then they'll start spilling their guts to us about the experience they had. Now, if it's an experience, many of them are afraid to mention it to their spouse or to their children or their coworkers because they're afraid they'll be thought that they're crazy. Mm-hmm. So they'll come share it with us. On the flip side, on the UFO side, I mean, we get calls all the time from airline pilots and policemen and folks in the military who, in their line of work, have run into these craft, and they're afraid for their job. I mean, they can't tell anyone, so they'll call us up and they'll say, "Hey, I couldn't tell anyone at work, but I wanted you to know this happened to me."
Mm-hmm.
And we'll take the report, keep them anonymous, of course. But some of our best cases come from those sources. Military pilots. Just pilots in general, law enforcement people. So,
yeah,
yes, people, definitely.
The skeptics say if these things are real, airline pilots would see them all the time, and these satellites would pick them up all the time.
Yeah, but your line of sight in an airliner is probably about 150 miles, maybe 200 miles. I mean, you aren't looking. Our globe is 8,000, maybe more around, in terms of diameter. So it's you only see a very limited space around you. So
right. I will say to someone, look up in the sky during the day, especially, how many airplanes do you see? Well, I don't see any airplanes. You know, there are 4,000. I think, 40,000 airplanes over the contiguous United States at all times, and you can't see one out of all that sky?
Yeah.
You know, how would you expect to see a true anomalous aerial phenomenon, UFO, when there's like, 10,000 a year UFO reports?
Well, plus, yeah. Plus, if they're up at 100,000 feet or something like that, I mean, in daylight, it's
right.
They're probably very, very small to the eye, and they tend to blend into the sky.
Right.
It's usually at nighttime when you get the glow coming off the body of the craft from the energy states, changes in the energy states, that these things light up and really cause quite a show for people.
Really? Really? So in December last year, there was the article in the New York Times where two Navy airmen captured gun camera pictures of the Pacific Ocean in 2004. Of any
correct.
Unknown object, and the video has gone viral. So has MUFON investigated that video?
Yeah, we had actually three different photo analysts look at the video. It was a little bit tough because the object itself in the video is not very crisp or clear, and that's actually what happens when you go into these higher energy states and you're manipulating space and time. You don't get a real sharp image of the craft. There's not really hard to find edges to it. Mm. So a lot of people were really kind of naysaying because, oh, it's not really sharp, you can't really tell. That's been a common complaint about the very best of UFO photos throughout the ages, is that, oh, it's so blurry, can't see it. Well, there's a reason for that. That's because of how they're manipulating space and time around them when they maneuver.
Right.
But we took a look at it, and it was really kind of inconclusive. I mean, there definitely was an object there, but you can't really prove that it's a flying saucer. You can't prove that it's a spacecraft from Zeta Reticuli.
No.
So, but there is definitely a craft in the photographs.
Yeah. James McGaha has said that about that video, that the camera pivoted when the craft, it appeared the craft pivoted.
Yeah.
He said, well, the camera pivoted that was taking the pictures. But if you look at that, the cloud bank is at a 45-degree angle on the left side of the frame, and when the object pivots, the crest of the cloud bank remains at the 45-degree angle.
Yep.
So that's correct. Impossible, you know?
Yep. And since the video footage came from the Pentagon directly, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think that there may have been a mix-up in the actual videos that were shown, because if you listen to the pilot's dialogue, he's talking about clear skies, yet in at least one of the videos you notice that the sky is all cloudy. So, but be that as it may, I know they're about to do another release here, and they're taking great lengths to make sure that everything matches perfectly, so that there isn't a lot of this skepticism that came out on the first one. So, My hope is that they'll continue to release this stuff, and it'll continue to add more fuel to the fire that UFOs are real, and that that's only a good thing for MUFON, as there's a lot of people out there who would want to know what's going on.
And there's also the glowing aura around the object, completely encircling the object. And, Smagaha says, that's the heat from an airplane, the heat from an airplane. I've seen pictures in infrared of airplanes where you can see the wings of the airplane, and the glow is around the fuselage, but not around the wings. Okay, this glow is around the entire object, and no wings are involved.
Right, exactly.
So. I don't know. This guy.
It appears these things are working in their own inertial time space. They're actually creating their own like type space time and coming into our environment. So that may be why that happens that way. I mean, you need a physicist, to figure that out. But it's quite fascinating. I mean, it's quite exciting, actually.
Yeah. Well, our science has been able to shoot a proton through space-time, and you say, oh, yeah, that's a proton, big deal. You
right.
can't do that with a craft or a person, But you think back, everything started somewhere. The Wright brothers flew the width of 747. And
right,
you know, it started somewhere.
You got to start somewhere, exactly.
That's it.
Exactly.
So, can we find that video or other videos like that at MUFON.org? .com?
Well, we don't have any gun cam. I mean, other than what's been released by the military, we don't have any gun camera video footage of that nature. But I'm hopeful that as these guys start releasing these videos, that we can put them part of our archive. That'd be an awesome thing to have.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you know, obviously videos and photographs of what people have told us are craft, and we're always looking for more evidence to support that. But I think we've got to start kind of turning our focus here and change it from just trying to prove UFOs exist to discovering who's behind all these UFOs. Like, who's flying these things? What's the intelligence behind them, and what are their intentions? I think that's really what the public's going to want to know once this comes out more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes apparently, painfully obvious that we're not alone in the universe. They're going to want to know more about, well, tell me who the guys are flying these things, and why are they here, and what do they want with us, and do we have to be concerned at all? And that just goes to our basic nature as humans, which is to protect ourselves.
Yeah. Do you get any of the sense of who they are, what they want from these experiences?
They give us information, and that's one of the things we're trying to do right now is collect that information and put it into a database so we can actually do analysis on it. I think that's an important thing. Of course, we always have to be cautious that we're not being told, you know, lied to or being deceived by advanced type beings like this. But definitely they get common themes, common messages given to them, and that's something we'd like to look at in a scientific way in a database that basically collects this information and allows us to do analysis on it.
And what have you garnered?
What have we garnered?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, of course, there'll be people who will say, well, this is just hearsay because, you know, someone was told something by one of these beings. So, you know, by the time it gets to me, the next person, it's hearsay. But, you know, basically that they're from out there, you know, that they are traveling here, that they're concerned about, you know, and this has been true since the 50s. I mean, these aren't new messages, what we're doing with our planet, how we're not being good stewards of it. And that they're concerned for our safety and welfare based on the fact of what we're doing with nuclear weapons and how we seem to enjoy killing each other rather than trying to help serve each other.
That's right.
So those are the common big themes, I think, that are out there. And I think nobody can dispute them. I mean, they're regardless of whether they come from an extraterrestrial source or an interdimensional source or whatever source they come from, I think we can all agree those are probably good things to do.
Or your next-door neighbor, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Whether it's your next door neighbor across on the other side of the fence or the other side of the galaxy, am I right?
Yeah. Well, Jesus Christ came here 2,000 years ago to tell us to you know,
right.
Treat your neighbor as yourself, and you know, we still haven't learned that lesson.
I was going to say, have we listened?
No, not very well.
Reading
the newspaper, it doesn't look like we have.
No. Let me read a paragraph from the Times article. Mr. Alessandro said that the only thing that had ended was the, and this is referring to the, you know, Project Blue Book that I like to call Project Whitewash.
Yep.
So the only thing that ended was the efforts government funding, which dried up in 2012. From then on, Mr. Alessandro said in an interview he worked with officials from the Navy and the CIA. He continued to work out of his Pentagon office until this past October. Then he resigned to protest what he characterized as executive secrecy and internal opposition. Why aren't we spending more time and effort on this issue? Mr. Alessandro wrote in a resignation letter to Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. Mr. Alessandro said that the effort continued and that he had a successor whom he declined to name. So it sounds like that project is still going on at the Pentagon.
The answer is yes. It is. And from my conversations with Lewis, it's going quite well. Actually, it's not being funded through the Pentagon anymore, but it's through other sources. But the program is definitely still going on.
So, in other words, our tax dollars are not paying for it anymore.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I don't remember exactly which sources he told me, but, you know, let's just say it's the CIA or the U.S. Navy or whoever has an interest in this subject. Somebody has an interest in the subject and is willing to take it out of their budget and keep it going. So there's more than just the Pentagon.
Yeah, yeah. Who was it? Okay, I don't have his name right here. From Las Vegas.
Oh, Robert Bigelow?
Bigelow, yeah. Is he funding some of this, or?
No, I don't think. I don't think Robert's. Well, I don't know. He could be. I guess he could be, but I don't believe he is. I think it's coming. It's strictly government funding.
Yeah.
He might be at the other end of the contracts. I mean, it's very possible that they've contracted him to do something in the analysis of the data they collect. But I don't. I don't really know. I mean, you'd have to ask him.
Now he's claimed to. Bigelow's claimed that he has some. Some paraphernalia from a crash disc or whatever in his warehouse. Is that true?
Well,
do you think?
I don't know. It's possible. I mean, we at MUFON headquarters have two crash saucers, bits and pieces that we've been given from different sources. Now, unfortunately, none of them have really a good chain of custody to them. But actually, one does have very good chain of custody, but the other one doesn't. But when you test the metals, they don't turn out to be anything extraordinary. So it's hard to prove they're extraterrestrial origin or belong to a flying disc if the metals look pretty much like other metals here on this planet already. So I don't know if he does or does not. But if he does, it wouldn't surprise me if it's maybe some of the same materials, because these people who've been out digging in New Mexico on these crash sites have been coming up with metals and claiming that they're from the craft that were there that had crashed. I just haven't been able to prove that by showing that it's something extraordinary. So
I don't have the the references right here, but I do remember that some piece of metal that was allegedly from the Roswell crash was tested, and they said everything that was in this metal was, and then they named the different metals that were, you know, was an alloy.
Elements, yeah.
And the different elements were from Earth, you know. You could find these elements on Earth.
Sure.
Except for two of them, and I can't name them right now because I don't have that information. I wish I did. Two of those elements are like oil and water. You can't mix them together. You can't make an alloy out of these elements. And yet there it was. So,
very interesting. So obviously their material sciences may be far advanced from ours, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So it's not a matter of they can't be mixed because there they were. It's just that we can't mix them, okay?
Yeah, we didn't have that technology then.
Right.
I think our material sciences have really advanced quite a bit in the last 10, 15, 20 years from where they were, you know, 40, 50 years ago.
Right. Oh,
I think we're going to start seeing it in structures on aircraft and different things, cars.
Right.
So wouldn't it be nice to have a car that uncrumpled after someone maybe a door dang? I mean, that would just be awesome.
Bounce back.
Yeah, you never have to have door dings taken out of your car again.
I wrote a science fiction book. It was my last literary contribution. And using some of these technologies that, number one, they've claimed, you know, people claim to see certain technologies in UFOs, and they say, well, we can't do that, so it can't be. Well, we have a lot of technology in the infancy stage, but we, you know, like this proton, I said we could send it through time and space. We have that knowledge. We just you know, can't control it. So I don't know where I was going with this.
Well, you know what? That's an interesting thought, because that's one of the things I've been looking at, thinking about quite intensely, because you have all these crashes that occurred back in the mid to late 40s and 50s down in New Mexico, all over the place, you know. And if you think about it, our top scientists were down there at that time, working on the Trinity site and for the atomic bomb and some other projects. And Einstein, Oppenheimer, Edward Teller, Wernher von Braun, I think, was down there at some point. Makes me wonder if maybe we were goofing around with space-time manipulation based on Einstein's equations, and these guys had come up with a way to manipulate space and time, and perhaps maybe some of these craft might have been ours coming back from experiments that they were doing. Because they all kept crashing within about the same area. Now, that doesn't explain bodies, and it doesn't explain some of the other factors of these craft based on the witnesses that were on site when they happened, but it is another thought. I mean, perhaps we had learned how to do this 50, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, I guess now, actually, and maybe that's been taken underground somehow, or taken top secret. And, if you have the ability to manipulate space-time, you could probably put a nuclear bomb on the white steps of the White House and blow it up before anyone even knew it was there. And that would be a reason to keep this stuff top secret,
or
super top secret, because it would be a national security issue.
Well, certainly.
You wouldn't want that knowledge falling in the hands of someone who would do something like that. So there may be good reasons why they've been keeping this out of our preview for all these years.
All right. And once they say, you know, this is real, you know, we are being visited, these UFOs are real, and people are being abducted, and they can't just leave it at that. Because the questions are just going to, the unending questions are going to start at that point. Am I right?
That's exactly right. You know, and then people always ask me, why isn't there disclosure? Why isn't there disclosure? I think there has been disclosure. I think if there was ever a disclosure, it happened on December 16th when the New York Times broke this story. But beyond that, I mean, I think if you put yourself in the shoes of the president or anybody in Congress, let's say you were elected congressman for your district there, would the first thing you do be to go on stage and tell people aliens are here? Besides being booed off the stage, people would, if they believed you, they'd want to know, well, why are they here? Who are they?
Right.
Do we have anything to fear? I mean, what are you doing to protect us? I mean, 1,000 questions would come out that you would not be able to have total answers to.
That's right.
So why would you ever step on stage and make that proclamation? I don't think you would, personally.
They just don't. They don't have a handle on it yet. I need to take one more moment to remind our listeners. You're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. We are not alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with the international head of MUFON, Mr. Jan Harzen. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Jan Harzen.
I answered anything.
Answered anything. Hey, you.
Exactly.
Tell us about the upcoming symposium.
I'm glad you asked me, David. Yeah, we've got an outstanding symposium this year. We just sent out the first blast this morning. It's going to be held in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. It's actually the Crown Plaza, Philadelphia-Cherry Hill. It's right across the bridge from downtown Philadelphia. And it'll feature about a dozen great speakers, including Nick Pope, Dr. Bob Wood, and many others, John Brandenburg. You can go to our website, MUFONSymposium.com, and pick up all the information. We've got some great special events going on, tour of the USS New Jersey battleship, and we've got a planetarium that's going to be there on site that you'll be able to get a private planetarium tour by an astronomer. We've got the experiencer meetings, events, workshops that'll be in the mornings with Kathy Martin and George Medich and the whole ERT team. What else we got going? We got the field investigator training. That'll be on Thursday. And we've got speaker panels. So we got a lot of different things you can do, plus hearing the dozen or so great speakers as well. We're going to have Salma Siddick, who is the one of the children who was part of the aerial school in Zimbabwe that where the craft landed and beings came out and interacted with the children.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the children that was interacted with, so she'll be giving a firsthand account of what happened to her.
All right.
So strongly encourage people to attend if you can. It's going to be within driving distance of New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, that whole eastern seaboard, but people should fly in from everywhere to come attend. You know, the biggest thing I always find, David, with these conferences is not so much the speakers and the events themselves. It's actually getting a chance to meet with other like-minded people,
right,
and share research and talk about what's going on around the world and just network with people. I mean, mm-hmm. that's really why I go to these conferences, honestly.
Also, these MUFON meetings, we here in Michigan have five of them a year, and we have quite a good turnout, and people just, they've got stories they want to get off their chest to somebody who will listen to them, and here's an opportunity to talk to people, have a nice little luncheon, have a speaker, and we have great meetings, and like I say, like-minded people who get together and feel comfortable in telling their stories. They're not going to be laughed at, you know?
Exactly.
They're not going to be judged. So, yeah, once again, the symposium is when?
It'll be July 27th, 8th, and 9th at the Crown Plaza, Cherry Hill in New Jersey, this year. So go to the website, MUFONSymposium.com, and all the information is there for you.
MUFONSymposium.com. MUFONSymposium.com,
exactly.
All one word, right?
All one word.
Yeah. Do you think that full official disclosure would cause panic or PTSD in the general public?
I do not. I think people would be able to take it. There's obviously going to be some people who have a hard time processing it, but many of those people will deny it. Flat out. I was a little bit disappointed to read some of the comments in the CNN news feeds about this Pentagon release in regards to Luz Elizondo, and I just happened to read this one piece, feedback, and there were actually people in there saying, oh, you're crazy, this never happened, you're lying. So, like I said, as a species, if for some reason if we can't handle it, our defense mechanisms kick in and we begin denying it. So, but I think the vast majority of the public, I'd say 80-85% for sure, are just waiting. I mean, they know it's real. And if someone came out and said that of any authority, they'd say, well, it's about time. I mean, I think that's what the reaction would be. I don't think there's going to be any end-of-the-world financial collapse, end-of-world religions, or anything else that people have been saying would be catastrophic if we ever did this. So I'm like, ready to get on with it. In fact, I'm calling December 16th the day of disclosure. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Time to get on.
I would say it's the day of disclosure. I mean, what do you need? You had the press
top
conference.
Top people
conference.
In each of the major areas, right? Top Defense Department people,
yeah.
Top Lockheed Martin private industry people, top scientists, top intelligence community, CIA. I mean, what else do you need?
Governors.
They're all telling you this is real.
Yeah. Fife Symington, former governor of Arizona, came out after making fun of the Phoenix lights. He came out and said, you know what? I saw it myself, but I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to panic people. He didn't want to panic
because
people.
Because people make fun of you, right? Yeah.
People
I don't think
make
they'll be making fun of you anymore. I think this has been a watershed event that happened, and
yeah,
people are getting on board with it.
But he lost the election next time because all those people who witnessed that craft or crafts, I think it was one major craft.
Right.
You know, he was calling them crazy, calling them liars, and you know, get real and all of this. Well, they were real.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, I'm not going to have some. This is them talking. I'm not going to have someone like that represent my state, represent me in my state, you know? So.
Well, you're in a difficult position when you're in a political office because you have to
toe the line.
Yeah, well, you have to toe the line. Yeah.
You do.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, but yeah, we have all of these top brass in government, in politics, and then they had the mock hearings, congressional hearings, and Stephen Bassett was just on the show recently, and he's part of that congressional hearing debate, and these former congressmen, women, went in there mostly as skeptics, open-minded skeptics, some closed-minded skeptics, every last one of them. At the end of those hearings, every last one of them said, it is worthy of a congressional hearing.
Right.
Now, true.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how anyone today, with the images coming in from the Hubble telescope and the Kepler telescope and all the other information we're gleaming from these exoplanets, could even think that there's a possibility that we're not alone, let alone that whoever these intelligent beings are could be visiting us. So I think it's going to become less and less. I mean, it's just the data is just going to keep pouring out in a number of different places that we're not alone in the universe, that there's people visiting us on a regular basis, that we're just part of this life that God put in the entire universe, and, you know, we need to get used to it.
Yeah, well when you say God put in the universe, even the Catholic Church has come forward and said, yeah, well, certainly there are people on other planets. They're God's children, too.
Yep, they've been leading the charge in that way, and that's great. I'm glad to see that.
Yeah. I've said on this show before that they're getting ahead of the curve because they can, the writing,
yep,
the handwriting's on the wall.
Exactly.
This is going to come out, as it pretty much has already, like you say, in December of last year. It's come out that we've been studying. We still are. It never really ended after Project Blue Book, has it?
No, definitely not. No, it's never ended. In fact, I don't think Project Blue Book was it. I mean, it was a whole operation behind the scenes that never ceased since the beginning of the very first sightings back in the early 40s.
Yeah. And it was before that, actually.
Probably even back before that. You're right. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
But they stood up and took notice after Roswell. And they're still debunking Roswell, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They will continue to do so.
So what's the future of MUFON?
Well, I think, you know, we're just going to keep it on. We've got a great a system with CMS and collecting the data and putting it out to the public, letting them see for themselves what's happening. We're trying to dig into our database on a regular basis. We have a number of teams doing that and pulling up our very, very best cases to highlight and feature on the front page of our website and also in the journal, and blast out to the press and public so that they can see what's really going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to keep doing that and supporting the efforts of others like TTSA and other organizations that want to bring this information out and start doing something useful with it. I mean, it doesn't do much good to just collect the data. We really want scientists to use that data to help figure out how this stuff all operates for the benefit of all humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's new energy systems, new propulsion systems, ways to travel or manipulate space-time, or if it's even just sociological in terms of helping us figure out ways to live better together. I mean, we're all for that.
Yeah, I think it's a matter. I think us traveling to the stars and them traveling from those stars to us is a matter of bending space-time, because people who complain or cite the fact that we can't get there from here because it just take too long, they're right. And so they'd have to bend space-time, and I think that's what they do.
Yep.
My sighting, yep, way back when, I witnessed that. I witnessed them come through a hole in the atmosphere. And that's
right.
The only way they could have done that was to bend space-time and leave there, wherever their place is, and arrive at in our space, just
right.
Like that.
Correct.
Yeah, so.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Okay, once again, website is?
Well, the MUFON.com is the main website, but if you want to go to the symposium website, go to MUFONsymposium.com.
Okay. MUFONsymposium.com. Mr. Jan Harzen, I appreciate you you coming on and talking with us. And
my pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me, David.
I hope we can do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Would love to.
Very good. Have a good one.
You too. Bye now.
Bye. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.FM's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. That's UFOImplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Guys and dolls, you were at the malt shop with Daddy G and WHFR, and we are going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop, where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are, back in the 50s.
You're my